exclusive support for the Alaska Live series of live music and conversation on KUAC is made possible by a generous grant from Design Alaska. Design Alaska, celebrating 60 years of strengthening community through support of the arts.
It is a play by Oscar Wilde, first performed on February 14th, 1895 at the St. James Theatre in London, and it is a farcical comedy in which the protagonists maintain fictitious persona to escape the burdensome social obligations. Working within the social conventions of late Victorian London, the play's major themes are the triviality with which it treats institutions as serious as marriage and the resulting satire of Victorian ways. Our performance has been set in New York, 1895. West Valley Drama presents The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde, a trivial comedy for serious people. The persons in the play are John Worthing, J.P., played by Emily Schmetzer, Algernon Moncrief, played by Christian Rochester in Act 1,
Hola.
And Evan Pemberton in Acts 2 and 3. Reverend.
He's waving for the radio audience out there. He is.
Reverend Canon Chasuble, D.D., by Robert Sullivan. Miss Prism, governess, played by Laura Green.
Ahoy!
Lady Bracknell, played by Kennedy Davis.
Hi!
Honorable Gwendolyn Fairfax, played by Aaliyah Davidson.
Hi!
And Cecily Cardew, played by Eleanor Daziak.
Hello, friends.
We begin in Act 1, in Algernon Moncrief's flat in Half Moon Street West. The room is luxuriously and artistically furnished. Jack has come for a visit, and they are sitting in the parlor.
Before we get started, can I know this is a, I will let you introduce the scene one more time. Jack is played by Emily. Emily.
Hello.
Hi. Just really quick, is this your first time playing like opposite, you know, a male role? And
no, it is not. I have played male roles before a lot, actually.
You've been part of the Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater Groundlings. So that's probably been something you've done on stage.
It has.
It's exciting that you're playing Jack, Emily. Congratulations. And Christian, you're playing Algernon for at least three of the production nights.
Yeah.
All right. And then you've got Evan here as playing Algernon during two of the productions.
I think it's also three.
Three. Oh, you get split it down the middle. Three and three.
Split it down the middle.
Great. Yep. And yes, Lily.
Special Valentine's show. So we open on February 8th, which is a Thursday at 7 p.m. And then we have a Friday night show at 7 p.m. and a Saturday matinee at 2, a Saturday night show at 7 p.m. And then we have a special Valentine's Day special show on Valentine's Day at 6 p.m.
The Importance of Being Earnest is showing at the West Valley Performing Arts Center there at West Valley High School.
The DeWild.
It's at the DeWild Theater at West Valley High School. Yeah. So if you make it to the parking lot of West Valley High School, I bet there'll be some signs to get you to The Importance of Being Earnest on this, not this weekend, but next weekend and during the week on Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. Very cool. All right, let's set the scene again real quick, Lily. As the director, are you used to being interrupted sometimes by...
Sorry, I really blasted through that
No.
one.
No! You know, people like repetition, so our human ears love it. Let's hear the scene again.
Okay, we begin in Act 1, in Algernon Moncrief's flat in Half Moon Street West. The room is luxuriously and artistically furnished. Jack has come for a visit, and they are sitting in the parlor.
Hello. Why cucumber sandwiches? Why such reckless extravagance in one so young? Who is coming to tea?
Oh, merely Aunt Augusta and Gwendolyn.
How perfectly delightful.
Yes, that is all very well, but I am afraid Aunt Augusta won't quite approve of your being here.
May I ask why?
My dear fellow, the way you flirt with Gwendolyn is perfectly disgraceful. It is almost as bad as the way Gwendolyn flirts with you.
I am in love with Gwendolyn. I have come up to town expressly to propose to her.
I thought you would come up for pleasure. I call that business.
How utterly unromantic you are.
I really don't see anything romantic in proposing. It is very romantic to be in love, but there is nothing romantic about a definite proposal. Why, one may be accepted, one usually is, I believe, then the excitement is all over. The very essence of romance is uncertainty. If ever I get married, I'll certainly try to forget the fact.
I have no doubt about that, dear Algy. The divorce court was specially invented for people whose memories are so curiously constituted.
Oh, there is no use speculating on that subject. Divorces are made in heaven. Please, don't touch the cucumber sandwiches. They are ordered specially for Aunt Augusta.
Well, you have been eating them all this time.
That is quite a different matter. She is my aunt. Have some bread and butter. The bread and butter is for Gwendolyn. Gwendolyn is devoted to bread and butter.
And very good bread and butter it is, too.
Well, my dear fellow, you need not eat as if you were going to eat at all. You behave as if you were married to her already. You are not married to her already, and I don't think you ever will be.
Why on earth do you say that?
Well, in the first place, girls never marry the men they flirt with. Girls don't think it right.
Oh, that is nonsense.
It isn't. It is a great truth. It accounts for the extraordinary number of bachelors one sees all over the place. In the second place, I don't give my consent.
Your consent?
My dear fellow, Gwendolyn is my first cousin. And before I allow you to marry her, you will have to clear up the whole question of Cecily.
Cecily? What on earth do you mean? What do you mean, Algy, by Cecily? I don't know anyone of the name Cecily.
Bring me the glasses case Mr. Worthing left in the smoking room last time he dined here.
Do you mean to say that you have had my glasses case all this time? I wish to goodness you would let me know. I've been writing frantic letters to the NYPD about it. I was very nearly offering a large reward.
Well, I wish you would offer one. I happen to be more than usually hard up.
There is no good in offering a large reward now that the thing has been found.
I think that is rather mean of you, Ernest, I must say. However, it makes no matter, for now that I look at the inscription inside, I find that the thing isn't yours after all.
Of course it is mine. And you've seen me with it 100 times. And you've no right whatsoever to read what's written inside. It is a very ungentlemanly thing to read a private glasses case.
Oh, it is absurd to have a hard and fast rule about what one should read and what one shouldn't. More than half of the modern culture depends on what one shouldn't read.
I am quite aware of the fact, and I don't propose to discuss modern culture. It isn't the sort of thing one should talk of in private. I simply want my glasses case back.
Yes, but this isn't your glasses case. The glasses case is a present from someone of the name Cecily, and you said you didn't know anyone of that name.
Well, if you want to know, Cecily happens to be my aunt.
Your aunt?
Yes, charming lady she is too. Lives at Martha's Vineyard. Just give it back to me, Algy.
But why does she call herself Little Cecily if she's your aunt and lives at Martha's Vineyard? From Little Cecily with her fondest love.
My dear fellow, what on earth is there in that? Some aunts are tall and some aunts are not tall. That is a matter that surely an aunt may be allowed to decide for herself. You seem to think that every aunt should be exactly like your aunt, and that is absurd. For heaven's sake, give me back my glasses case.
Yes, but why does your aunt call you her uncle? From Little Cecily with her fondest love to her dear Uncle Jack. There is no objection, I admit, to an aunt being a small aunt, but why an aunt, no matter what her size may be, should call her own nephew her uncle? I can't quite make out. Besides, your name isn't Jack at all, it's Ernest.
It isn't Ernest. It is Jack.
You have always told me it was Ernest. I have introduced you to everyone as Ernest. You answered to the name of Ernest. You look as if your name was Ernest. You are the most earnest-looking person I ever saw in my life. It is perfectly absurd you're saying your name isn't Ernest. It's on your cards. Here's one of them. Mr. Ernest Worthing, B4, the Plaza. I will keep this as proof that your name is Ernest if ever you attempt to deny it to me, to Gwendolyn, or to anyone else.
Well, my name is Ernest in town and Jack in the country. And the glasses case was given to me in the country.
Yes, but that does not account for the fact that your small aunt Cecily, who lives at Martha's Vineyard, calls you her dear uncle. Come on, old boy. You had much better have the thing out at once. Now go on. Tell me the whole thing. I may mention that I have always suspected you of being a confirmed and secret Bunburyist, and I'm quite sure of it now.
Bunburyist? What on earth do you mean by a Bunburyist?
I'll reveal to you the meaning of that incomparable expression as soon as you are kind enough to inform me why you are Ernest in town and Jack in the country.
Well, produce my glasses case first.
Here it is. Now produce your explanation and pray make it improbable.
My dear fellow, there is nothing improbable about my explanation. In fact, it is perfectly ordinary. The old Mr. Thomas Cardew, who adopted me when I was a little boy, made me in his will the guardian to his granddaughter, Miss Cecily Cardew. Cecily, who addresses me as her uncle, out of motives of respect that you could not possibly appreciate, lives at my place in the country under the charge of her admirable governess, Miss Prism.
Where is that place in the country, by the way?
That is nothing to you, dear boy. You are not going to be invited. Though I may tell you quite candidly, the place is not in Saratoga.
I suspected that, my dear fellow. I have bunburied all over Saratoga on 2 separate occasions. Now go on. Why are you Ernest in town and Jack in the country?
My dear Algy, I don't know whether you will be able to understand my real motives. You are hardly serious enough. When one is placed in the position of guardian, one has to adopt a very high moral tone on all subjects. It's one's duty to do so. And as a very high moral tone can hardly be said to conduce anything for one's health or one's happiness, I have always pretended to have a younger brother of the name Ernest, who lives in the Albany and gets into the most dreadful scrapes. That, my dear Algy, is the whole truth. Pure and simple.
The truth is rarely pure and never simple. What you really are is a Bunburyist. I was quite right in saying you were a Bunburyist. You are one of the most advanced Bunburyists I know.
What on earth do you mean?
You have invented a very useful younger brother called Ernest, in order that you may be able to come up to town as often as you like. I have invented an invaluable permanent invalid called Bunbury, in order that I may be able to go down into the country whenever I choose. Bunbury is perfectly invaluable. If it wasn't for Bunbury's extraordinary bad health, for instance, I wouldn't be able to dine with you at the Plaza tonight, for I have been really engaged to Aunt Augusta for more than a week.
I haven't asked you to dine with me anywhere tonight.
I know, you are absurdly careless about sending out invitations.
Algernon's Aunt Augusta and Cousin Gwendolyn come for tea. Algernon takes Lady Bracknell into the other room so Jack can propose to Gwendolyn. As Jack is kneeling before Gwendolyn, Lady Bracknell re-enters.
Mr. Worthing, rise, sir, from this semi-recumbent posture. It is most indecorous.
Mama, I must beg you to retire. This is no place for you. Besides, Mr. Worthing has not quite finished yet.
Finished what, may I ask?
I am engaged to Mr. Worthing, Mama.
Pardon me, you are not engaged to anyone. When you do become engaged to someone, I or your father, should his health permit him, will inform you of the fact. An engagement should come on a young girl as a surprise, pleasant or unpleasant as the case may be. It is hardly a matter that she could be allowed to arrange for herself. And now I have a few questions to put to you, Mr. Worthing. While I am making these inquiries, you, Gwendolyn, will wait for me below in the carriage.
Mama!
In the carriage, Gwendolyn. Gwendolyn, the carriage.
Yes, Mama.
You can take a seat, Mr. Worthing.
Thank you, Lady Bracknell. I prefer standing.
I feel bound to tell you that you are not down on my list of eligible young men, although I have the same list as Mrs. Rockefeller. We work together, in fact. However, I am quite ready to enter your name should your answers be what a really affectionate mother requires. Do you smoke?
Well, yes, I must admit that I smoke.
I am glad to hear it. A man should always have an occupation of some kind. There are far too many idle men in New York as it is. How old are you?
29.
A very good age to be married at. I have always been of opinion that a man who desires to get married should know either everything or nothing. Which do you know?
I know nothing, Lady Bracknell.
I am pleased to hear it. I do not approve of anything that tampers with natural ignorance. Ignorance is like a delicate, exotic fruit. Touch it, and the bloom is gone. What is your income?
Between 7,000 and 8,000 a year.
That is satisfactory.
I have a country house with some land attached to it, of course. About 1,500 acres, I believe.
A country house? How many bedrooms? Well, that point can be cleared up afterwards. You have a townhouse, I hope. A girl with a simple, unspoiled nature like Gwendolyn could hardly be expected to live upstate.
Well, I own a house in Central Park West, but it is leased by the year to Mrs. Bloxham. Of course, I can get it back whenever I like, at 6 months' notice.
Mrs. Bloxham? I don't know her.
She goes about very little. She is a lady considerably advanced in her years.
Nowadays that is no guarantee of respectability of character. What number in Central Park West?
149.
The unfashionable side. I thought there was something. However, that could easily be altered.
Do you mean the fashion or the side?
Both if necessary, I presume. Now to minor matters. Are your parents living?
I have lost both my parents.
To lose one parent, Mr. Worthing, may be regarded as a misfortune. To lose both looks like carelessness. Who was your father? He was evidently a man of some wealth.
I'm afraid I really don't know. The fact is, Lady Bracknell, I said I had lost my parents. It would be near to the truth to say that my parents seem to have lost me. I don't actually know who I am by birth. I was found.
Found?
The late Mr. Thomas Cardew, an old gentleman of very charitable and kindly disposition, found me, and gave me the name of Worthing because he happened to have a first-class ticket for Worthing in his pocket at the time. Worthing is a seaside resort in Thousand Island.
Where did the charitable gentleman who had a first-class ticket for this seaside resort find you?
In a handbag.
A handbag?
Yes, Lady Bracknell, I was in a handbag. A somewhat large black leather handbag with handles to it. An ordinary handbag, in fact.
In what locality did this Mr. Thomas Cardew come across this ordinary handbag?
In the cloakroom at Penn Station.
The cloakroom at Penn Station?
Yes, the Brooklyn line.
The line is immaterial. Mr. Worthing, I confess I feel somewhat bewildered by what you have just told me. To be born, or at any rate bred, in a handbag, whether it handles or not, seems to me to display a contempt for the ordinary decencies of family life. I would strongly advise you, Mr. Worthing, to try and acquire some relations as soon as possible, and to make a definite effort to produce, at any rate, one parent of either sex before the season is quite over.
Well, I don't see how I could possibly manage to do that. I can produce the handbag at any moment. It is in my dressing room at home. I really think that ought to satisfy you, Lady Bracknell.
Me, sir? What has it to do with me? You can hardly imagine that I and Lord Bracknell would dream of allowing our only daughter, a girl brought up with the utmost care, to marry into a cloakroom and form an alliance with a parcel? Good morning, Mr. Worthing.
Lady Bracknell sweeps out in majestic indignation. When the act ends, Gwendolyn and Jack are forbidden to be engaged, and Algy has secretly gotten the address for Jack's country house. Act 2. The garden of Cardew Manor. The garden, an old-fashioned one, full of roses. Time of year, July. Basket chairs and a table covered with books are set under a large yew tree.
Cecily! Cecily! Surely such a utilitarian occupation as the watering of flowers is rather Mary's duty than yours? Especially at a moment when intellectual pleasures await you. Your German grammar is on the table. Pray open it at page 15. We will repeat yesterday's lesson.
But I don't like German. It isn't at all a becoming language. I know perfectly well that I look quite plain after my German lesson.
Child, you know how anxious your guardian is that you should improve yourself in every way. He laid particular stress on your German as he was leaving for town yesterday. Indeed, he always lays stress on your German as he is leaving for town.
Dear Uncle Jack is so very serious. Sometimes he is so serious, I think he cannot be quite well.
Your guardian enjoys the best of health, and his gravity of demeanor is especially to be commended in one so comparatively young as he is. I know no one who has a higher sense of duty and responsibility.
I suppose that is why he often looks a little bored when we three are together.
Cecily! I'm surprised at you. Mr. Worthing has many troubles in his life. Idle merriment and triviality would be out of place in his conversation. You must remember his constant anxiety about that unfortunate young man, his brother.
I wish Uncle Jack would allow that unfortunate young man, his brother, to come down here sometimes. We might have a good influence over him, Miss Prism. I'm sure you certainly would. You know German and geology, and things of that kind influence a man very much.
I do not think that even I could produce any effect on a character that, according to his own brother's admission, is irretrievably weak and vacillating. Indeed, I'm not sure that I would desire to reclaim him. I'm not in favor of this modern mania for turning bad people into good people at a moment's notice. As a man sows, so shall he reap. You must put away your diary, Cecily. I really don't see why you should keep a diary at all.
I keep a diary in order to enter the wonderful secrets of my life. If I didn't write them down, I should probably forget all about them.
Memory, my dear Cecily, is the diary that we all carry about with us.
Yes, but it usually chronicles the things that have never happened and couldn't possibly have happened. I believe that memory is responsible for nearly all 3-volume novels.
Do not speak slightingly of the 3-volume novel, Cecily. I wrote myself in earlier days.
Did you really, Miss Prism? How wonderfully clever you are. I hope it did not end happily. I don't like novels that end happily. They depress me so much.
The good ended happily and the bad unhappily. That is what fiction means.
I suppose so, but it seems very unfair. And was your novel ever published?
Alas, no. The manuscript, unfortunately, was abandoned. I use this word in the sense of lost or mislaid. To your work, child, these speculations are profitless.
But I see dear Dr. Chasuble coming up through the garden.
Dr. Chasuble! This is indeed a pleasure.
And how are we this morning? Miss Prism, you are, I trust, well.
Miss Prism has just been complaining of a slight headache. I think it would do her so much good to have a short stroll with you in the park, Dr. Chasuble.
Cecily, I have not mentioned anything about a headache.
No, dear Miss Prism, I know that, but I felt instinctively that you had a headache. Indeed, I was thinking about that and not my German lesson when the rector came in.
I hope, Cecily, you're not inattentive.
Oh, I'm afraid I am.
That is strange. Were I fortunate enough to be Miss Prism's pupil, I would hang upon her lips. I spoke metaphorically. My metaphor was drawn from bees. Mr. Worthing, I suppose, has not returned from town yet?
We do not expect him till Monday afternoon.
Yes. He usually likes to spend his Sunday in New York. He is not one of those whose sole aim is enjoyment, as by all accounts that unfortunate young man his brother seems to be. But it must not disturb you any longer.
Oh, I think, dear doctor, I will have a stroll with you. I find I have a headache after all, and a walk might do it good.
With pleasure, Miss Prism, with pleasure. We might go as far as schools and back.
That would be delightful. Oh, Cecily, you will read your political economy in my absence, the chapter on the fall of the rupee you may omit. It is somewhat too sensational. Even these metallic problems have their melodramatic side.
Horrid political economy. Horrid geography. Horrid, horrid German.
Algernon has come from town without Jack knowing. He gains admission to the manor by pretending to be Jack's younger brother who lives in New York, Mr. Ernest Worthing.
I have never met any truly wicked person before. I feel rather frightened. I am so afraid he will look just like everyone else. He does.
You are my little cousin Cecily, I'm sure.
You must be under some strange mistake. I am not little. In fact, I believe I am more than usually tall for my age. But I am your cousin Cecily. You, I see from your card, are Uncle Jack's brother, my cousin Ernest. My wicked cousin Ernest.
Oh, I'm not really wicked at all, cousin Cecily. You mustn't think that I'm wicked.
If you are not, then you have certainly been deceiving us all in a very inexcusable manner. I hope you've not been leading a double life, pretending to be wicked but really being good the whole time. That would be hypocrisy.
Oh, of course I have been rather reckless.
I am glad to hear it.
In fact, now that you mention this subject, I have been very bad in my own small way.
I don't think you should be so proud of that, though I'm sure it must have been very pleasant.
It's much pleasanter being here with you.
I can't understand how you were here at all. Uncle Jack won't be back till Monday afternoon.
That is a great disappointment. I'm obliged to go up by the first train on Monday morning. I have a business appointment that I'm anxious to miss.
Couldn't you miss it anywhere but in New York?
No, the appointment is in the city.
Well, I know, of course, how important it is not to keep a business engagement if one wants to retain any sense of the beauty of life, but I still think you had better wait till Uncle Jack arrives. I know he wants to speak to you about your emigrating.
About my what?
Your emigrating. He's gone to buy your outfit.
I certainly wouldn't let Jack buy my outfit. He has no taste in neckties at all.
I don't think you will require neckties. Uncle Jack is sending you to Australia.
Australia? I'd sooner die.
Well, he said at dinner on Wednesday night that you would have to choose between this world, the next world, and Australia.
Oh. Well, the accounts I've received of Australia and the next world are not particularly encouraging. This world is good enough for me, Cousin Cecily.
Yes, but are you good enough for it?
I'm afraid that I'm not. That is why I want you to reform me. You might make that your mission, if you don't mind, Cousin Cecily.
I'm afraid I've no time this afternoon.
Well, would you mind my reforming myself this afternoon?
It is rather quixotic of you, but I think you should try.
I will. I feel better already.
You are looking a little worse.
Well, that is because I'm hungry.
Oh, how thoughtless of me. I should have remembered that when one is going to lead an entirely new life, One requires regular and wholesome meals. Won't you come in?
Thank you. Might I have a boutonniere first? I never have any appetite unless my outfit is complete.
Carnation?
No. I'd sooner have a pink rose.
Why?
Because you are like a pink rose, Cousin Cecily.
I don't think it can be right for you to talk to me like that. Miss Prism never says such things to me.
Then Miss Prism is a short-sighted old lady. You are the prettiest girl I ever saw.
Miss Prism says that all good looks are a snare.
They are a snare that every sensible man would like to be caught in.
Oh, I don't think I would care to catch myself a sensible man. I shouldn't know what to talk to him about.
Algernon and Cecily enter into the house. Miss Prism and Dr. Chasuble return from their stroll.
You are too much alone, dear Dr. Chasuble. You should get married.
The Primitive Church was distinctly against matrimony.
That is obviously the reason why the Primitive Church has not lasted up to the present day. And you do not seem to realize, dear Doctor, that by persistently remaining single, a man converts himself into a permanent public temptation.
But is a man not equally attractive when married?
No married man is ever attractive, except to his wife.
And often, I've been told, not even to her.
Jack arrives to the country in mourning for his imaginary younger brother, Ernest, who he has decided to kill. He finds out Algernon is pretending to be his younger brother, Ernest, is very much alive, and has been flirting with Cecily.
What a fearful liar you are, Jack! I have not been called back to town at all!
Yes, you have!
I haven't heard anyone call me.
Your duty as a gentleman calls you back.
My duty as a gentleman has never interfered with my pleasures in the smallest degree.
I can quite understand that.
Well, Cecily is a darling.
You are not to talk of Miss Cardew like that. I don't like it.
Well, I don't like your clothes. You look perfectly ridiculous in them. Why on earth don't you go up and change? It's perfectly childish to be in deep mourning for a man who is actually staying for a whole week with you in your house as a guest. I call it grotesque.
You are certainly not staying with me for a whole week, as a guest or anything else. You have got to leave by the 5 o'clock train.
I certainly won't leave you so long as you're in mourning. It would be most unfriendly. If I were in mourning, you should stay with me, I suppose. I should think it very unkind of you if you didn't.
Well, will you go if I change my clothes?
Yes, if you're not too long. I never saw anybody take so long to dress and with such little result.
Well, at any rate, that is better than being always overdressed as you are.
If I'm occasionally a little overdressed, I make up for it by being always immensely overeducated.
Your vanity is ridiculous. Your conduct is an outrage, and your presence in my garden utterly absurd. However, you have got to catch the 5 o'clock train, and I hope you will have a pleasant journey back to town. This bunburying, as you call it, has not been a great success for you.
Jack goes into the house.
I think it's been a great success. I'm in love with Cecily, and that's everything.
Oh, I merely came back to water the roses. I thought you were with Uncle Jack.
He's gone to order the dog cart for me.
Oh, is he going to take you for a nice drive?
He's going to send me away.
Then, have we got to part?
I'm afraid so. It's a very painful parting.
It is always painful to part from people whom one has known for a very brief space of time. The absence of old friends one can endure with equanimity, but even a momentary separation from anyone to whom one has just become introduced is almost unbearable.
Thank you. I hope, Cecily, I shall not offend you if I state quite frankly and openly that you seem to me to be in every way the visible personification of absolute perfection.
I think your frankness does you great credit, Ernest. If you will allow me, I will copy your remarks into my diary.
Do you really keep a diary? I'd give anything to look at it. May I?
Oh, no. You see, it is simply a very young girl's record of her own thoughts and impressions, and consequently meant for publication. When it appears in volume form, I hope you will order a copy. But pray, Ernest, don't stop. I delight in taking down from dictation. I have reached absolute perfection. You can go on. I am quite ready for more. Oh, don't cough, Ernest. When one is dictating, one should speak fluently and not cough. Besides, I don't know how to spell a cough.
Cecily, ever since I first looked upon your wonderful and incomparable beauty, I've dared to love you wildly, passionately, devotedly, hopelessly.
I don't think you should tell me that you love me wildly, passionately, devotedly, hopelessly. Hopelessly doesn't seem to make much sense, does it?
Cecily.
Uncle Jack would be very much annoyed if he knew you were staying on till next week at the same hour.
Oh, I don't care about Jack. I don't care about anybody in the whole world but you. I love you, Cecily. You will marry me, won't you?
You silly boy. Of course. Why, we have been engaged for the last 3 months.
For the last 3 months?
Yes, it will be exactly 3 months on Thursday.
But how did we become engaged?
Well, ever since dear Uncle Jack first confessed to us that he had a younger brother who was very wicked and bad, you, of course, have formed the chief topic of conversation between myself and Miss Prism. And, of course, a man who is much talked about is always very attractive. One feels there must be something in him, after all. I dare say it was foolish of me, but I fell in love with you, Ernest.
Darling! And when was the engagement actually settled?
On the 14th of February last. Worn out by your entire ignorance of my existence, I determined to end the matter one way or another, and after a long struggle with myself, I accepted you under this dear old tree here. The next day, I bought this little ring in your name, and this little bangle, with the true lover's knot I promised you always to wear.
Did I give you this? It's very pretty, isn't it?
Yes, you've wonderfully good taste, Ernest. It's the excuse I've always given you for leading such a bad life. And this is the box in which I keep all your dear letters.
My letters? But my own sweet Cecily, I've never written you any letters.
You need hardly remind me of that, Ernest. I remember only too well that I was forced to write your letters for you. I wrote 3 times a week, and sometimes oftener.
Oh, do let me read them, Cecily.
Oh, I couldn't possibly. They would make you far too conceited. The 3 you wrote me after I'd broken off the engagement are so beautiful and so badly spelled that I can hardly read them now without crying a little.
But was our engagement ever broken off?
Of course it was. On the 22nd of last March. You can see the entry if you'd like. Today I broke off my engagement with Ernest. I feel it is better to do so. The weather still continues charming.
But why on earth did you break it off? What had I done? I had done nothing at all. Cecily, I'm very much hurt indeed to hear you broke it off, particularly when the weather was so charming.
It would hardly have been a really serious engagement if it hadn't been broken off at least once. But I forgave you before the week was out.
What a perfect angel you are, Cecily.
You dear romantic boy. I hope your hair curls naturally, does it?
Yes, darling, with a little help from others.
I am so glad.
You'll never break off our engagement again, Cecily.
I don't think I could break it off now that I have actually met you. Besides, of course, there is the question of your name.
Yes, of course.
You must not laugh at me, darling, but it had always been a girlish dream of mine to love someone whose name was Ernest. There is something in that name that seems to inspire absolute confidence. I pity any poor married woman whose husband is not called Ernest.
But, my dear child, do you mean to say you could not love me if I had some other name?
But what name?
Oh, any name you like. Algernon, for instance.
But I don't like the name Algernon.
Well, my own dear, sweet, loving little darling, I really can't see why you should object to the name of Algernon. It is not at all a bad name. In fact, it is rather an aristocratic name. Half the chaps who get into bankruptcy court are called Algernon. But seriously, Cecily, if my name was Algie, couldn't you love me?
I might respect you, Ernest. I might admire your character. But I fear I should not be able to give you my undivided attention.
Cecily, your rector here is, I suppose, thoroughly experienced in the practice of all rites and ceremonials of the church?
Oh, yes. Dr. Chasuble is a most learned man. He has never written a single book, so you can imagine how much he knows.
I must see him at once on a most important christening. I mean on a most important business.
Oh!
I shan't be away for more than half an hour.
Considering that we have been engaged since February the 14th, and that I have only met you today for the first time, I think it is rather hard for you to leave me for so long a period as half an hour. Couldn't you make it 20 minutes?
I'll be back in no time.
What an impetuous boy he is. I like his hair so much. I must enter his proposal in my diary.
Gwendolyn arrives to the country house.
Pray ask the lady to come out here. Mr. Worthing is sure to be back soon. And you can bring tea. Miss Fairfax. I suppose one of the many good elderly women who are associated with Uncle Jack in some of his philanthropic work in New York. I don't quite like women who are interested in philanthropic work. It is so forward of them. Pray let me introduce myself to you. My name is Cecily Cardew.
Cecily Cardew? What a very sweet name. Something tells me that we are going to be great friends. I like you already more than I can say. My first impressions of people are never wrong.
How nice of you to like me after we have known each other such a comparatively short time. Pray sit down.
I may call you Cecily, may I not?
With pleasure.
And you will always call me Gwendolyn, won't you?
If you wish.
Then that is all quite settled, is it not?
I hope so.
Perhaps this might be a favorable opportunity for my mentioning who I am. My father is Mr. Bracknell. You have never heard of Papa, I suppose?
I don't think so.
Outside the family circle, Papa, I am glad to say, is entirely unknown. I think that is quite as it should be. The home seems to me to be the proper sphere for the man. And certainly once a man begins to neglect his domestic duties, he becomes painfully effeminate, does he not? And I don't like that. It makes men so very attractive. Cecily, Mama, whose views on education are remarkably strict, has brought me up to be extremely short-sighted. It is part of her system. So do you mind my looking at you through my glasses?
Oh, not at all, Gwendolyn. I am very fond of being looked at.
You are here on a short visit, I suppose?
Oh, no. I live here.
Really? Your mother, no doubt, or some female relative of advanced years resides here also?
Oh, no. I have no mother. Nor, in fact, any relations.
Indeed?
My dear guardian, with the assistance of Miss Prism, has the arduous task of looking after me.
Your guardian?
Yes, I am Mr. Worthing's ward.
Oh, it is strange he never mentioned to me that he had a ward. How very secretive of him. He grows more interesting hourly. I am not sure, however, that the news inspires me with feelings of unmixed delight. I am very fond of you, Cecily. I have liked you ever since I met you, but I am bound to state now that I know that you are Mr. Worthing's ward, I cannot help expressing a wish that you were, well, just a little older than you seem to be, and not quite so very alluring in appearance, in fact, if I may speak so candidly.
Pray do so. I think that whenever anyone has anything unpleasant to say, one should always be quite candid.
Well, to speak with perfect candour, Cecily, I wish that you were fully 42 and more than usually plain for your age. Ernest has a strong, upright nature. He's the very soul of truth and honor. Disloyalty would be as impossible to him as deception.
I beg your pardon, Gwendolyn. Did you say Ernest?
Yes.
Oh, but it is not Mr. Ernest Worthing who is my guardian. It is his brother, his elder brother.
Ernest never mentioned to me that he had a brother.
I am sorry to say they have not been on good terms for a long time.
That accounts for it. And now that I think of it, I have never heard any man mention his brother. The subject seems distasteful to most men. Cecily, you have lifted a load from my mind. I was growing almost anxious. It would have been terrible if any cloud had come across a friendship like ours, would it not? Of course, you are quite, quite sure that it is not Mr. Ernest Worthing who is your guardian.
Quite sure. In fact, I am going to be his.
I beg your pardon?
Dearest Gwendolyn, there is no reason why I should make of it a secret to you. Our little county newspaper is sure to chronicle the fact next week. Mr. Ernest Worthing and I are engaged to be married.
My darling Cecily, I think there must be some slight error. Mr. Ernest Worthing is engaged to me. The announcement will appear in the Morning Post on Saturday, at the latest.
I am afraid you must be under some misconception. Ernest proposed to me exactly 10 minutes ago.
It is certainly very curious, for he asked me to be his wife yesterday afternoon at 5:30. If you would care to verify the incident, pray do so. I never travel without my diary. One should always have something sensational to read in the train. I am so sorry, dear Cecily, if it is any disappointment to you, but I am afraid I have the prior claim.
It would distress me more than I can tell you, dear Gwendolyn, if it caused you any mental or physical anguish. But I feel bound to point out that since Ernest proposed to you, he has clearly changed his mind.
If the poor fellow has been entrapped into any foolish promise, I shall consider it my duty to rescue him at once and with a firm hand.
Whatever unfortunate entanglement my dear boy may have gotten into, I will never reproach him with it after we are married.
Do you allude to me, Miss Cardew, as an entanglement? You are presumptuous. On an occasion of this kind, it becomes more than a moral duty to speak one's mind. It becomes a pleasure.
Do you suggest, Miss Fairfax, that I entrapped Ernest into an engagement? How dare you? This is no time for wearing the shallow mask of manners. When I see a spade, I call it a spade.
I am glad to say that I have never seen a spade. It is obvious that our social spheres have been widely different.
Mary enters with tea.
Are there many interesting walks in the vicinity, Miss Cardew?
Oh, yes, a great many. From the top of one of the hills quite close, one can see five counties.
Five counties? I don't think I should like that. I hate crowds.
I suppose that is why you live in New York City.
Quite a well-kept garden this is, Miss Cardew.
So glad you like it, Miss Fairfax.
I had no idea there were any flowers upstate.
Oh, flowers are as common here, Miss Fairfax, as people are in New York.
Personally, I cannot understand how anybody manages to exist in the country. If anybody who is anybody does, the country always bores me to death.
Ah, this is what the newspapers call agricultural depression, is it not? I believe the aristocracy are suffering from it very much just at present. It is almost an epidemic amongst them, I have been told. May I offer you some tea, Miss Fairfax?
Thank you, detestable girl, but I require tea.
Sugar?
No, thank you. Sugar is not fashionable anymore.
Cake or bread and butter?
Bread and butter, please. Cake is rarely seen at the best houses nowadays.
Hand that to Miss Fairfax.
You have filled my tea with lumps of sugar, and though I asked most distinctly for bread and butter, you have given me cake. I am known for the gentleness of my disposition and the extraordinary sweetness of my nature, but I warn you, Miss Cardew, you may go too far.
To save my poor, innocent, trusting boy from the machinations of any other girl, there are no lengths to which I would not go.
From the moment I saw you, I distrusted you. I felt that you were false and deceitful. I am never deceived in such manners. My first impressions of people are invariably right.
It seems to me, Miss Fairfax, that I am trespassing on your valuable time. No doubt you have other calls of a similar character to make in the neighborhood.
Enter Jack.
Ernest! My own Ernest!
Gwendolyn, darling!
A moment. May I ask if you are engaged to be married to this young lady?
To dear little Cecily? Of course not. What could have put such an idea into your pretty little head?
Thank you. You may.
I knew there must have been some misunderstanding, Miss Fairfax. The gentleman whose arm is at present wound your waist is my guardian, Mr. John Worthing.
I beg your pardon?
This is Uncle Jack.
Jack? Oh...
Here is Ernest.
My own love.
A moment, Ernest. May I ask you, are you engaged to be married to this young lady?
To what young lady? Good heavens, Gwendolyn.
Yes, to good heavens, Gwendolyn. I mean to Gwendolyn.
Of course not. What could have put such an idea in your pretty little head?
Thank you. You may.
I felt there was some slight error, Miss Cardew. The gentleman who is now embracing you is my cousin, Mr. Algernon Moncrief.
Algernon Moncrief? Oh! Are you called Algernon?
I cannot deny it.
Oh. Is your name really John?
I could deny it if I liked. I could deny anything if I liked. But my name certainly is John. It has been John for years.
A gross deception has been practiced on both of us.
My poor, wounded Cecily.
My sweet, wronged Gwendolyn.
You will call me sister, will you not?
Oh.
There is just one question I would like to be allowed to ask my guardian.
An admirable idea. Mr. Worthing, there is just one question I would like to be permitted to put to you. Where is your brother Ernest? We are both engaged to be married to your brother Ernest, so it is a matter of some importance to us to know where your brother Ernest is at present.
Gwendolyn, Cecily, it is very painful for me to be forced to speak the truth. I will tell you quite frankly that I have no brother Ernest. I have no brother at all.
No brother at all?
None.
Had you never a brother of any kind?
Never. Not of any kind.
I am afraid it is quite clear, Cecily, that neither of us is engaged to be married to anyone.
It is not a very pleasant position for a young girl to find herself in, is it?
Let us go into the house. They will hardly venture to come after us there.
No. Men are so cowardly, aren't they?
Gwendolyn and Cecily exit.
This ghastly state of things is what you call Bunburying, I suppose.
Yes, and a perfectly wonderful Bunbury it is. The most wonderful Bunbury I've ever had in my life.
Well, the only small satisfaction I have of this whole wretched business is that your friend Bunbury is quite exploded. You won't be able to run up to the country quite so often as you used to do, dear Algy. And a very good thing, too.
You won't be able to disappear to the city quite so frequently as your wicked custom was, and not a bad thing either.
As for your conduct toward Miss Cardew, I must say that your taking in a sweet, simple, innocent girl like that is quite inexcusable. To say nothing of the fact that she is my ward.
I can see no possible defense at all for your deceiving a brilliant, clever, and thoroughly experienced young lady like Miss Fairfax, to say nothing of the fact that she is my cousin.
I wanted to be engaged to Gwendolyn, that is all. I love her.
Well, I simply wanted to be engaged to Cecily. I adore her.
There is certainly no chance of you marrying Miss Cardew.
I don't think there's much likelihood, Jack, of you and Miss Fairfax being united.
Well, that is no business of yours.
If it was my business, I wouldn't talk about it.
How can you sit there, calmly eating muffins when we are in this horrible trouble? I can't make out. You seem to me to be perfectly heartless.
Well, I can't eat muffins in an agitated manner. The butter would probably get on my cuffs. One should always eat muffins quite calmly. It is the only way to eat them.
I say it is perfectly heartless you're eating muffins at all under the circumstances.
When I'm in trouble, eating is the only thing that consoles me. At the present moment, I'm eating muffins because I'm unhappy. Besides, I'm particularly fond of muffins.
Well, there is no reason you should eat them all in that greedy way.
I wish you would have tea cake instead. I don't like tea cake.
Good heavens! I suppose a man may eat his own muffins in his own garden.
But you just said it was perfectly heartless to eat muffins.
I said it was perfectly heartless of you, under the circumstances. That is a very different thing.
That may be, but the muffins are the same.
Algy, I wish to goodness you would go!
You can't possibly ask me to go without having some dinner. It's absurd. I never go without my dinner. No one ever does, except vegetarians and people like that. Besides, I just have made arrangements with Dr. Chasuble to be christened at 5:45 under the name of Ernest.
I made arrangements this morning with Dr. Chasuble to be christened myself at 5:30. And I naturally will take the name of Ernest. Gwendolyn would want it. We can't both be christened Ernest. It's absurd. Besides, I have a perfect right to be christened if I like. There is no evidence at all that I have ever been christened by anybody. I should think it extremely probable I never was. And so does Dr. Chasuble. It is entirely different in your case. You have been christened already.
Yes, but I've not been christened for years.
Yes, but you have been christened. That is the important thing.
So, I know my constitution can stand it. If you are not quite sure about your ever having been christened, I must say I think it rather dangerous your venturing on it now. It might make you very unwell. You can hardly have forgotten that someone very closely connected with you very nearly carried off this week in Saratoga by a severe chill.
But you said yourself a severe chill is not hereditary.
It usedn't to be, I know, but I dare say it is now. Science is always making wonderful improvements on things.
Oh, that is nonsense. You are always talking nonsense.
Jack, you're at the muffins again. I wish you wouldn't. There are only two left, and I told you I was particularly fond of muffins.
But I hate tea cake.
Why on earth, then, do you allow tea cake to be served up in your own house to your guests? What ideas you have of hospitality.
Algernon, I have already told you to go. I don't want you here. Why don't you go?
I haven't quite finished my tea yet, and there's still one muffin left.
End of Act Two. Aww.
Yay! What great fun to have the West Valley Drama Club here doing readings from The Importance of Being Earnest. Evan, are you having to shove muffins in your face and read your and give your lines on stage?
Yeah, it's quite difficult.
Are you glad to be the muffinless character here at Alaska Live?
Yeah, it's it's a great relief. Yeah.
And you have a fully costumed and scenes and set there at the DeWild Theater coming up Thursday, February 8th is the opening.
Yep, it's all well underway. I think it'll all look great by the time the showings are coming around.
Well, very cool. And complete with the muffins that you have to eat while saying your lines.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks so much for being a part of this show. You really pulled us into the world of Ernest. And I guess we'll find out who gets to be Ernest when we see your show. Starting February 8th is when it opens. And I wanted to talk to Gwendolyn really quick, too. So fun. You came with a bit of a wreath for the radio audience. You've got the flowers from the garden around your head. Where do you find some of those in Fairbanks, Alaska in the winter?
Oh, you know, around Aloof.
This isn't your first time on stage.
No, it is not. I have participated in some plays in the past with Flot Junior and other productions my schools have put on.
So cool. It's great to have you here on KUAC's Alaska Live with the West Valley Drama Club. I wanted to talk to Cecily really quick, too. Eleanor, you play Cecily, and I recognize your last name. Your last name is?
Adasiak.
Adasiak, yes. Because your dad has been in. Is your dad Paul?
Yes, yeah. Family legacy.
He's been in Fairbanks Shakespeare plays and some other FDA stuff, I think. And so sometimes kids shy away from their parents' hobbies. You, on the other hand.
No, I think that having my father involved in theater actually encouraged me to participate in it. My first play was when I was six. I think I had three words to say. But
what were you in?
The Time of Your Life. I played Anna.
Aww.
It was very cute.
Doesn't he also have a show opening pretty soon?
He does. Am I allowed to advertise for that? Yeah, he's in Terra Nova.
He's in Terra Nova. Great. Susie just did an interview with Bill Wright, the director.
Oh, awesome. So. Yeah.
And you play the role of Cecily so well. You're so animated here on the radio.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to me.
It is going to be a great joy to see you on stage. Again, the shows start February 8th and they continue. Can you give us where they are?
Yes, I can. They're at West Valley High School in the DeWild Theater. Opens on Thursday, February 8th. Then we have a performance on the next day.
Nice. The 9th, huh?
Yeah.
Friday the 9th.
We have two performances on Saturday, one matinee at 2 and one regular show at 7. Something
and
else, and then
and
a Valentine's
you have
show.
The Valentine's
yes,
show at 6
which
o'clock.
I'm very excited about it. It's going to be so cute.
That's so cute. And this is a show where you could bring your sweetheart to, you could bring your family to it. You really pulled us in as the audience here to the readings from In the Importance of Being Earnest. And so I can tell that fully staged on the DeWild Theater stage, it'll be a really fun show.
Absolutely. You have to come see it.
Yeah, great.
You are legally required to.
And Lily, can I get you to step up to the mic? Thank you.
Hi.
Hey, you are no stranger to playing characters on stage.
No.
Is this your first time directing?
Yeah. I've always dreamed of directing, and I've always dreamed of directing at West Valley High School. I saw their production of The Westing Game when I was in fourth grade. And I remember reading the playbill and being like, a kid directed it. So it's really, really exciting. And the cast is really good.
They are great. Yeah. So way to get them into shape. So you've watched directors like Carrie Seward, who is here as your drama coach, yeah. and Andrew Castle. You've been on stage with them directing. What are some of the things you've taken away from them and used as your own?
Well, Carrie has been so important to this production, and so important to me. We started working on it in October, and she has taught me so much about, like, working with other people and even just like blocking. She's really good at blocking and making things fit on the stage. And Andrew Castle has taught me a lot about working with people and, yeah.
And what show might they be interested in that you could also plug?
They also might be interested in the upcoming production of A Midsummer Night's Dream, which is coming in March. And
great.
I'm in that as Oberon, and that's cool. And it's directed by Andrew Castle.
Very fun with the Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater.
It's UAF Theater.
UAF yeah. Theater. Great. Mm-hmm. Okay. It is a Shakespeare play. But Carrie Seward, thank you so much for taking time to be the West Valley High School drama coach. And you are mentoring all of these actors that are up and coming in our community. And
well, I got my start at West Valley. Well, I had started before that, but Carol Merritt was my high school drama coach and John Peralt, who's the sound guy, was in West Valley drama with me. But she basically being immersed in that program, we did all the plays and then the drama debate and forensics competitions. So that's really where I got my career going in theater. And then, you know, from there I went on to Theater UAF and all kinds of other great things in my theatrical life. So it's nice to be able to do that for other people. And, you know, especially a female director in
In
this world, we need a lot of those. So
absolutely.
It's nice to be able to encourage more people to become theatrical decision makers, because those are the people that decide what kind of plays we do and in what ways that we do them. And that is important for our world. So,
and it's important to have a strong theater community here in Fairbanks, Alaska, because this is what makes it a great place to live, even through the 30 and 40 belows in the winter.
Yeah, we've gotten through it rehearsing a lot, which has been really wonderful.
Well, the importance of being earnest is the West Valley High School Drama Club's next production. And Kennedy, you play the mom, and you are so good at playing that role of, well, I don't know. Is this your first time being on stage?
No, not at all. Great. I've been doing theater all my life. So, yeah, it's been nice.
Well, what's one thing you're looking forward to the production of The Importance of Being Earnest?
I love this character because she's so, like, stuck up and just so pretentious. So I just, like, love playing her, and it'll just be really fun to be super over the top during the show and everything. So, yeah.
Wonderful. I think we have not talked to Ms. Prison and the doctor, right? If you would take those. No, and you over here. Yes, thank you. Very good. Directing from the host chair here. And are you a senior here? Can you introduce yourself?
Junior.
You're a junior. Are you headed to UAF?
I hope so.
Great.
I don't know whether I am or not. I don't really know what I'm going to do, but...
Well, I hope... Can you introduce yourself really quick? I'm looking through my notes, and yes.
I'm Laura Green. This isn't my first time doing theater, but I definitely hope it's not the last. Junior at West Valley High School.
Your role, you play it very well of... you know, taking care of little It's okay. It's live radio. We're good. You play the role of taking care of little Cecily, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. And the your Dr.
Chasuble.
Chasuble. And Dr. Chasuble is, he has some interest in Mrs. Prism also, it seems as though.
Yeah. He's a metaphor that Carrie used a few years back was that he's a bit like a teenage boy. He's a little anxious and a bit hesitant.
Well, that came across here on Alaska Live too. Thank you so much, you all, for being here. And yeah, best wishes to your opening on February 8th at the Dwild Theater. And hey, great to have the cast and crew of The Importance of Being Earnest on KUAC's Alaska Live. Thanks to our studio audience and Alaska Live crew, John Peralt on sound, Heather Hinsman and Mac Landry on cameras, and Andy B. back in the FM studio. For KUAC's Alaska Live, I'm Lori Neufeld. Exclusive support for the Alaska Live series of live music and conversation on KUAC is made possible by a generous grant from Design Alaska. Design Alaska, celebrating 60 years of strengthening community through support of the arts.